morning and welcome to the show. Evan Bray, great to have you here on this Thursday morning. First day back for me. Had a few days off at the farm helping out with harvest, working on canola pretty much through the weekend and the last few days. And boy, the weather has been so good. So good. Yesterday, breezy, but warm. And we've had warm temperatures. So good for everyone that's been working on harvest, trying to get the crops in, and hopefully things are going well on your farm. You always will have little things. Yesterday, even after my brother's fair warning, took the shear pin out on the auger at the bin, so we were down for a little bit while we got that fixed. But those are the things. I mean, as my brother's fixing it, he's like, hey, Ev, this is farming. It is so true. So true. But finding a way to get through. Hopefully things are going very well for you. By the way, on the weekend, so my mom loves to come out and she'll jump in the grain truck, ride along for a while. Then she'll jump in the combine, ride with my brother in the combine for a while. On Sunday, she got into the truck and I noticed she was wearing these earrings. Now, if you saw the video that I posted online, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. They were chalk brushes, you know, like you would use on a chalkboard. Now, my mom, a grade one teacher for 36 years before retiring, had a ton of, whether it was the earrings, the little, you know, she wore the Santa brooch that you pull the string and Santa's arms and legs moved, a light up Christmas tree. I mean, she's a grade one teacher for all those years. She has got a jewelry box full of this sort of jewelry. Anyway, I just found it funny. She's been retired, by the way, since 2008. So I found it funny. She was wearing these chalk brush earrings. I post this little video. I actually said to her first, I said, hey, I'm going to shoot a quick video. I want to highlight your earrings. Is it okay if I post it online? She's like, oh yeah, sure. No problem. Well, what happens is we throw it on the Facebook page and it got a lot of views. So after that, the next day, mom shows back up in the grain truck, very boring earrings. Just like a plain gold hoop. She's like, no, I didn't. I mean, my hair was a mess. And did you see that Brad Wall liked your message? She said. So she's worried basically that Brad Wall thinks now that she's got messy hair. It was a windy day. Anyway. And I know my mom is probably hearing this right now and cringing as well. But I will say, enjoyed the fresh baked, home baked chocolate chip cookies that made its way into the grain truck, into the combine. That's always part of it too for me for harvest. So best of luck to finish up harvest for those that are still working away here over the next little while. The weather continues to be nice. So I said while I was out harvesting, I was a good captive audience for this show. Brent Laux did a great job of hosting the show Monday through Wednesday, and I listened with intent on all of the things that are going on. And each one, of course, I'm right away thinking about, okay, what do I think about that? Which is what you and I do every day. We'll talk about something. I'll say, this is what I think. You'll say, well, I don't agree with you, or maybe you do, and you will call in and we'll talk about it. That's the beauty of this hour for me. So phone lines and text lines are officially open, 1-877-332-8255, and we will talk about whatever is on your mind. I threw this out before the break. Prime Minister Mark Carney, at the United Nations meetings in the United States, recognizes the state of Palestine, along with a couple of other countries, on the weekend. And right away, I'm thinking, first of all, maybe not a surprise that he makes this statement, but is it the right time? This seems like an ill-advised time to be doing it. Number one, you know what Canada says isn't going to make one bit of difference. It doesn't. Like, let's just be honest with who we are on the world stage. Do we wield that sort of power? Not going to make a big difference. Number two, that's not the way the United States thinks, and we're in the middle of trade negotiations with the United States. Oh, with a leader who, by the way, doesn't like to be kicked, poked, prodded. Is this a good tactic for Canada? knowing it's not going to make a difference. It's not going to miraculously end the conflict. It's not going to have Hamas. It's certainly not going to have the terrorist group Hamas that runs Palestine lay down their weapons and say, okay, we've achieved success now that Canada recognizes Palestine as a state. It's the timing of it that I'm taking exception with. Now, there are people pushing back, which is fine. That's fine. The text line right away, I had a few people. Bobby said, Evan, there will never be a good time to recognize Palestine, but it has to be done. Jace, Evan, how can you say you don't like them recognizing Palestine as a state? Even if it were bad timing, it's a war. It's always bad timing. This way we can officially recognize it as it is what it is, a war turned into a genocide. That's Jace in Regina with that thought. At the end of the day, many people feel that this will do nothing but embolden Hamas. The more countries in the world that show this deference to a two-state solution, whether that's the right thing to do or not, there's still things that have to happen. And I feel like there should have been some caveats put on that. We recognize this as long as hostages are returned, Hamas lays down its weapons, Palestine can hold democratically governed elections, all of which are, I think, okay things to ask for. 1-877-332-8255. Phone lines are open. Text lines are open. By the way, off the topic of Palestine for a second, but I'm happy to go there if you want. These CFL rules, I don't think this is a big deal at all. At all. I texted Jamie and I listened 11 o'clock this week, the morning that the CFL commissioner, Stuart Johnston, made the announcement to the changes. I texted Jamie right away because he took over that portion of the show, sat in at 11 o'clock, played that, talked about it, and then, of course, it was big talk on the Green Zone that afternoon. I really do not see these as a big deal. In fact, I like the goalpost move. To me, the size of the field corresponds with the fact that the goalposts are moved. If you left the field the same size, the goalpost moved to the back of the end zone, it definitely would make a drastic change to the kicking game. It already has, for sure. Conforming the size of the end zones to be consistent in the league, moving to make sure benches are opposite, which obviously it is in Saskatchewan already. The benches are on opposite sides of the field, but some places it's not that way. I don't see this as a major thing. It does not give me heartburn at all. I remember, I was thinking back, my brother and I were talking about rule changes in sports. And I said, I was thinking back to when they removed the two-line pass in hockey. I was reffing hockey at the time, and I thought, oh my gosh, what is this going to do to the game? I think it had a good effect on the game. It sped it up, less whistles, more play, opened up different plays, changed the way teams had to play defense. I mean, there definitely were consequences. I didn't see them as bad. This, I still feel like we have a very distinct Canadian game. We have three downs. We have a different number of players. We have a ratio of Canadians, the width of our field. We have rules that are different, including the amendments that they made to the Rouge, which, by the way, I like that. Still have the WAG a lot. Like, there's still so many things about the Canadian game that is the Canadian game. Yes, I will say that to other levels of football, this is going to be a thing. You get university football teams using CFL fields. You get minor football at sometimes using CFL fields. So if the field is changing in length, what is going to happen to amateur, junior football, those types of things? So those are decisions. I mean, we're still a ways away. There's some time to make decisions there. And I would guess that eventually you will see other levels of football fall in line with this. I could be wrong, but I think that's probably what's going to happen. Anyway, I'm honestly not worried, upset, full of heartburn over the CFL changes. I know it's old news, but it's been building in me for the last number of days that I've been out in the field. 1-877-332-8255. Okay, let's go to the phone line. I want to grab a couple of calls. I'm going to start with Edwin in Regina. Hey, Edwin, how are you today?
Good. How are you doing today?
Good. Good to be back. And what's on your mind?
Well, I got 3 points about the gun buyback that I want to make and
sure.
People should think about.
Sure.
First of all, the government said they spent $22 million to buy back 12,000 guns. If you do the math on that, that works out to $1,800 a gun. I don't know anybody that got paid $1,800 a gun. So where'd the rest of the money go?
Well, you know where it went, Edwin. Admin costs. It takes a lot of people to run this. This is part of the problem. So that's where a lot of it is going to the administration of this program.
Okay, and number two, the government said that they're going to cap how much this program costs. So when they run off, when the cap's done, and there's still millions of firearms to pick up, who's going to pay for that? Is it going to be federally, provincially, municipally?
Such a good question.
How is that money going to get paid for?
It's such a good question, because if the answer is there's no more money, but we still expect you to turn your guns in, how's that going to work? First come, first serve.
Well, that's not even considering that if they don't even pay the people for their guns, we're still going to have to pay somebody to do this work. Who's going to pay for that?
Yeah.
Number three is, the government knows exactly how many guns there is because they have to go through the books of the distributors, and the distributors have to tell them what they're ordering. So they know what's out there. So they have an idea what the real cost should be.
Yeah. Yeah, Edwin, I sense the frustration in your voice, and I echo it. I listened to the conversation Provincial Firearm Commissioner Bob Freeburg on this program yesterday with Brent Laux, and we've had Bob on many, many times. He makes great points. And at the end of the day, these are all pricey, costly legislative initiatives that, mark my words, are going to have little, if any, impact on gun crime in this country. Because the criminals are still the criminals. The criminals are still getting guns by whatever means. Military-style rifles, while definitely high-profile, sensational crimes that are committed with them become very well known. Everyday gun crimes, of which there's, I think on average 7 a day in the city of Regina, crimes involving or threatening the use of a firearm, those are not being committed with military-style rifles. Those are being committed with 22s, with shotguns, with handguns, with replica guns. The problem is the people using the guns. And this gun debacle is a debacle. I don't know what else you can say about it. Okay, let's take a break. We're off to a great start. We're doing it for an hour. I got people lined up on the phone. I got texts flowing in. It's 1 hour of open lines. We'll be right back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
I don't see how that pilot program is going to translate into an effective program across Canada. We're talking hundreds of thousands of firearms. People need to realize that the violent crimes in Canada, 97% don't involve firearms. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not an issue. Many firearms owners in this province don't even recognize or understand or will know that the firearm that they own currently that they bought 20 years ago is affected.
Bob Freeburg, who you heard there, was on this program yesterday talking about this federal firearm buyback. Many people struggling to use the words buyback. Call it a confiscation, call it whatever you want. By the way, speaking of sobering text messages, Paul and Raymore, hey, good morning, Evan. Just want to let you know, 3 months from today, Christmas. What? Crazy. Crazy, but true. Thanks for the text, Paul. 1-877-332-8255. I got a text on the firearm thing, a text from Brian saying, you know, if you break it down per gun, what does it cost the taxpayer between the cost of the firearm, the resources required, the administration of it, the destruction of each one? What is the actual cost? And this is amounting to a colossal waste of taxpayers' dollars. Certainly, I would agree. If it doesn't have an impact on enhancing safety in Canada, which I just finished saying, I really predict it's not going to make a difference. Criminals will be criminals. Criminals will use whatever firearms they can get their hands on, and they never get them legally. Very, very seldom are they getting them legally. Most times it's some sort of an illegal means, smuggled, whatever the case may be. Okay, let's go to the phone line. I want to grab this call from Curtis, who's, open lines means we can talk about whatever is on your mind. And Curtis from Saskatoon has got some thoughts on something today. What is it, Curtis?
Insurance in general, but I'm just amazed at all the things that insurance does to make sure they don't pay out.
So have you had a recent situation?
Well, I've had several recent situations that makes me really wonder why I'm buying insurance anymore. I had a mobile home, which is my cabin at the lake.
Okay, yeah.
And because it's a 1972 mobile home, the insurance company that I had been using, and they had actually given me a discount for zero claims, you know.
Right.
And I've had them for a number of years. Well, guess what? My cabin's too old.
So they won't insure it?
They won't insure it anymore. It's a 1972 mobile home. It's too old.
Mm.
Isn't that ridiculous? There are companies that will insure mobile homes of that vintage, but like our own government insurance, that company will insure that mobile home if I have it on a concrete foundation.
Uh-huh. I'm guessing all of these are mitigating factors to limit the chance that there's going to be a claim, obviously.
Well, yeah, but have you ever heard of a mobile home being put on a concrete foundation?
No, I have not. I have not. I'm just trying to figure out why they would do that. Yeah.
Yeah, so they don't have to take those claims. This is their way out of not having to insure this stuff.
Right.
My own vehicle had a hit and run, and the bumper had gotten crushed. The quarter panel on the back, same side, same direction as the bumper, also had a small dent in it. Those are apparently two different incidents on this whole hit and run. I wished I would have got to speak to your hit and run expert there.
Yes.
Your guys that do the crime scenes and all that. How can anybody, first off, tell which vehicle collided with which? Which vehicle hit a stationary object or the stationary, you know?
Yeah.
I don't see how this can happen. However, using very threatening language and threatening not to cover any of the claim, they told me to, you know, you can appeal, but chances are you're going to lose and you will have to pay out the whole thing.
You know, thanks for the call, Curtis, because you brought up, whether we're talking vehicle insurance, home insurance, cabin insurance, this is a good topic. This would be a good topic to bring an expert or two in. Because it's not about individual companies, although I know in Curtis's case, he's talking about he used one company for a number of years and all of a sudden the rules changed, or at least once his cabin got to a certain age, they did. It would be good to bring an expert in and maybe even open up phone lines. It's not about the company. It's more about policies, how they're developed, how the insurance strategies work to mitigate, of course, claims, but make sure people are covered. Curtis, thanks for the call. That's what Open Lines is all about. Whatever is on your mind, we'll take a break. We'll be back. James in Saskatoon, you're up next here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJM. What tomorrow will bring,
maybe a damn thing. Recognizing the state of Palestine, led by the Palestinian Authority, empowers those who seek peaceful coexistence and the end of Hamas. It doesn't legitimize terrorism.
That statement, many people are taking exception to. Others think it was the right thing to do. I am not in that camp, but there are a number of people that are texting in that said, that was the right thing to do. Others are pointing out that despite the fact this was voted down in the House of Commons, Mark Carney made the statement anyway. I want to take another call on this. James in Saskatoon calling in. James, there's lots going on. Let me just start by asking Mark Carney's statement of recognition, Canada's recognition of a state of Palestine, the right thing to do, and I'm talking right thing to do and right timing, question mark.
I think that Donald Trump embodied it all. The UN is a waste of time. It's a paper shuffler, right? What really is going to come out of this? Nothing. Right? It's hot air and a little bit of posturing and theatrics. But at the end of the day, nothing changes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Donald Trump's statement about the UN being the biggest waste of time is a truthful thing. We have Russia and China both sitting on the ethics community. Is this really an organization that we should really be concerned about the weight that they put behind anything?
Okay. Well, that's not what you called about, I know, James, but I thought I'd throw it out there anyway. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, so many stories to go for, right? The FSIN not necessarily having best practices of accounting. How does that go on, Evan?
Well, they, so, I mean, I think what they're now having to do is because there was a lot of they broke it into three different categories, right?
Sure.
And so I think there's now a response that is being awaited by the accounting firm that did the audit, wanting to know if they've got documentation that can substantiate some of the spending, the questionable spending that's up in the air. I don't know if that ever comes to light for us or not.
But isn't that what why it was deferred for a couple of months, that they were coming to try to have answers to the situation? I like I said, in this day and age, to not have, or especially for an organization that aspires to be a governance body, and not to have best practices
and has budgets as big as they do.
Like we're not talking a couple hundred dollars or $1,000. We're talking millions of dollars. Like, where's the receipts? I guess right.
I don't think we've heard the end of that one.
Sure, we haven't. But I must say that for the federal government to even take this first step must show that it implies to me that something had to be done, obviously, right? So anyways, the other thing I guess I wanted to talk about is the ostriches.
Yes, the ostriches.
So, Evan, I don't know if on your farm you ever raised cattle. Did you?
We sure did. Yes, we did.
Okay. So I come from a cattle raising farm as well. And back in the 70s, we had the occasion to have hoof and mouth disease. Were you ever familiar with
it? Yeah, I mean, I know about it. I don't think we had it on our farm, but I mean, I also remember mad cow going around, right?
Okay. So back in the 70s, we had the occasion where one of our cows got sick, and it had a second cow ended up catching the virus as well. And it was very specific as to what we had to do. We had to end up putting down 24 head of cattle. It was very specific as to how we did it, what we did with carcasses, and how we disposed of it all. And there was compensation for it. But at the end of the day, and this is what somehow social media people completely forget, but it's for the greater good of the industry, not only the cattle livestock industry, but the whole food production industry, right?
Yep.
And it's so unfortunate that so many people are conflating this into some kind of offshoot of the COVID and freedom movement and all this other stuff. It's not.
Yeah.
It's a couple of birds that got sick. There's a call order. Dispose of the birds and move on, everybody.
I couldn't agree with you more. I had written down some notes on this ostrich thing the other day when I was listening to it. I mean, culls are not new. Herd culling is not new. It's been done in deer and elk. It's been done in chickens and turkeys, cattle. At the end of the day, and I had a conversation, and I'll keep my source private because he didn't want me to say publicly, but he does work on making sure that livestock or herds are up to Canadian standards. We have a Canadian Food Inspection Agency for a reason. Now, those people that want to support supply management will say part of the reason why the Canadian way is so good is because our food is safe, because we make sure that it is disease-free, that animals are getting the inoculations, that they have quality of food. There's a number of things that have to exist if you're raising animals, whether it's for food, for science purposes and medicine purposes. Like, I understand this ostrich farm in BC is different, but it is, like, I am shocked. We are talking about an avian flu that if it's in, what is it, 20% of the ostriches that they have already died as a result of this, so this is an infected herd, This, our industry in Canada is billions and billions of dollars. And when you look at birds, 6.8 billion domestic poultry industry in Canada. This is big money. If this was chickens, would we have people protesting outside? Like, I don't get it. By the way, if you have a herd of ostrich, I don't think you need the ES on it, do you? Do you have to if it's plural? I don't know. Anyway, if you have a herd of ostriches and avian flu is present, you know what you shouldn't do? You shouldn't gather hundreds of people around the pen to protest because you don't want the human connection with the infected herd. This is mind-blowing to me that it's even gone as far as it has. So now the Supreme Court has ruled that they'll make a decision as to whether or not they'll hear this appeal. So everything's put on hold for now, and people are shouting and popping champagne corks, and they're so happy that the herd has been saved. Meanwhile, because of shedding of the avian flu, how many other birds are being affected? How many other domestic production facilities are being infected as a result of this? There's a reason why the Canadian Food Inspection Agency has the authority to order the cull of a herd. And it's crazy to me that this has even gone as far as it has. 1-877-332-8255. Lots to talk about. Let's go to Peter in Moose Jaw. How are you today, Peter?
Every night I'm doing very well. Very good show today.
Thanks. What's on your mind?
You were talking a little bit about the Middle East, and I have a little experience there. I'm an old guy, but I've actually lived quite a worldly life.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll tell you this. I'm going to give you some facts here about Hamas, and then you could kind of, people could kind of start to wrap their head around these things. So Hamas is a terrorist organization, and it's financed by the Iranians. It's financed by Hezbollah. They give them money, and the Palestinians are actually in favor of Hamas. They basically elected them to govern for them. So you hear the Palestine Authority. They're also, Yasser Arafat was financed by the Iranians. The Hamas leadership lives in Baghdad. They're not the ones scurrying around in the tunnels in Gaza. That's not them. They're in Baghdad, sitting in their nice little mansions, and they're financing all of this stuff through the Iranian government. So the Iranians are the major problem in the Middle East with regards to the Palestinians. They don't really care about the Palestinians either. They just give them money because it aggravates the Jews. And the Hamas is what they run on a platform. In our government here, we run on a platform of lower cost of living, lower taxes. Hamas runs on one plank of the platform, and that is to eradicate the Jews out of the Middle East. So you vote for Hamas, you give Hamas money, and you're basically supporting the eradication of the Jewish state in the Middle East. So Hamas has to go. The Iranians have to be bankrupt. And you have to find a way to get that separated across, because the other thing is that Hamas did this to create this situation that's going on right now. They are actually complicit in this whole thing. Mm-hmm. Because what they did is they sat around and they said, what kind of horrific massacre can we do? And these guys aren't stupid. They know what's going on. What kind of horrific massacre can we do? We'll wear body cams. We'll tear babies out of women's bodies, and we'll kill the Jews, and we'll put it on video so that everybody can see it. And that will anger Bibi so much that he's going to lose his mind. And he did. And they also realized that I don't think they knew that Trump was coming in, because this probably would have been stopped by now if it would have been Biden there. But Trump basically said, yeah, you know what? As long as this continues, Trump is absolutely complicit in this. He is providing weapons to Israel to do this. And he may say something outside of that, but he's giving them the permission by letting them continue. But here's the deal, is that they did this for a reason. They wanted the situation. Now, if they release the hostages now and they let them come back home, you could probably de-escalate the situation, but they haven't done that. So they're going around scurrying around in their little Gaza things. And you know where these tunnels are, by the way? I've seen these tunnels. They're in hospitals. They're in schools. They're in daycares. They're underneath these places. What do you think they're doing? They put these tunnels in there, you fire rockets from there, yep. And that's how you go about doing business. So you know that they're going to kill the kids.
Just going to jump in, Peter. We've talked about this so many times on the program, how they are using innocent civilians as human shields, which I mean, that speaks to the whole problem that we're having there. Peter, I appreciate you were getting, I could feel it. You were getting more going. You were more worked up as we went through. But I appreciate the knowledge you bring to the topic. And thanks for joining the program. One more quick call. Harold in Regina, very quickly. Harold, do you agree with the comments that Mark Carney made when he recognized the state of Palestine?
No, I totally disagree. And I thank you, Evan, for taking that position. And it's Ben Maroney was so good on this whole thing. No conditions have been met, and it's not going to put us in good stead with Donald Trump. And so it's a big mistake, and we need to raise our voices and not be silent on this.
The fact that Harold just said it's not going to put us in good stead with Donald Trump, I've got a number of people. In fact, I lost count of the number of texts that are people saying, who cares? Who cares what Donald Trump thinks? All I'm saying is, I'm not professing that we've got to do every single thing that Donald Trump does or wants us to do. But we are in a bit of a situation here where we're involved in negotiations with the states. We're also trying to deal with whatever we're going to do with these Chinese tariffs that are on canola and ag products and whatever. So we've got things going on with China. Is this the mess that we want to step foot in, knowing that what we say makes such little difference in the grand scheme of things? Canada coming out and recognizing Palestine as a state, I mean, there's going to be some people applauding it. But at the end of the day, on the world stage, do we carry that kind of weight? I ask rhetorically. 1-877-332-8255. We'll take our last break and we'll come back and finish up our open line segment here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
It's still three downs. There's still 12 people on the field. Field's still 65 yards wide. The end zone's still bigger than 10 yards. It's going 15. It's still Canadian football. There's still going to be onside punts and all the crazy plays. And
as a Canadian kid watching the game and everything, I think a lot of the points that are out from the hash is moving in, and now people feel like this is a lot closer to getting to the NFL. I'm kind of in the middle. I think some of the rules are actually great. We probably were first place last year with the bye week. We didn't lose off a missed field goal.
It's still going to be same team, still going to be CFL ball, and it should be an exciting product. So I'm curious to see it like everybody else.
I noticed a text from Jeremy saying, I don't really care for the shortening of the field, but the rest of it is all okay. I will give it a chance. But if it goes to four downs, I'm out. Thanks for the text, Jeremy. 1-877-332-8255. Vibrant conversations today on the text line, on the phone line. By the way, let me just jump back to this. So we had Curtis call in about some insurance problems he was frustrated about. Well, the retired insurance salesmen or insurance professionals have come out of the woodwork. Everyone texting in. I've got one text here that says, the insurance company was probably doing this Curtis fella a huge favor. The insurance would cost more than the value of an old mobile home. I'm a former insurance adjuster, and we speak to folks like this every day. Ron in Saskatoon says, I was a manager of a collision center for 27 years, and we can definitely tell whether or not multiple damaged areas are from the same accident or a different one. And then he goes on to talk about the SGI staff and how they deal with damaged vehicles on a daily basis, all leading me to believe we should do a segment on insurance. I think we should bring in a couple of professionals. We should open up phone lines for questions. I feel like this is one where we could do that. It's clearly an interest. People are weighing in. People are telling their own stories. It's a great topic. Okay, quickly back to the phone line. I want to grab the call from Bobby before we run out of time in Saskatoon. Bobby, how are you today?
Oh, I'm good, Evan. Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. What's on your mind? I see escalator gate written down here.
It doesn't matter if it was intentional or not. What matters is the video is there forever, and I cannot stop laughing at it. It was brilliantly beautiful.
And I should just remind people, if they've forgotten, that you are not a Trump fan.
No, I'm not.
That's usually clear in your text.
Will forget that.
Yeah.
Now to trash taking the stage and embarrassing himself and his country in front of the entire world. Evan, I told you the people were going to rise up. It's happening. And once the people rise up, not even Epps and his sycophants can stop them.
The, you know, I have to say it is suspicious to me that the escalator and the teleprompter and the sound all didn't work for Trump. I got to tell you, I'm scratching my head on that one. It just seems a little too coincidental to me. I know they've come out with justifications as to why that happened, but it's still a bit of a head scratcher. Okay, we're going to take our break. When we come back, I'm looking forward to this conversation. John Gormley and Doug Richardson, two people who were on our federal election panel back in April, are rejoining us. Here we are almost 5 months later. How is this now 5 month old elected liberal government doing? If we're giving grades on a report card, what grade do they get? We're going to break it down in a few areas. The next hour, John Gormley, Doug Richardson, and you here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.